It is Monday, November 9th for Patreon subscribers. It is Tuesday, November 10th for the rest of yous. Welcome to Menace of Sports. I am Zach Smith, your host, as always. What a weekend of college football. Huge, huge matchup, Notre Dame-Clemson. Awesome win by Notre Dame. Finally, they get a top five win. The program is not a phony. They played phenomenal, and I'm jacked to talk about it because I want to talk about what they did, how they did it. We could talk about Trevor Lawrence being out, and don't get me wrong, I think that definitely played a factor in the game. I mean, DJ Uiagalelei played really well. He missed a couple throws that I think Trevor would have made, but we'll talk about that as we get in the meat of the show. Also, the Florida Gators just dominated Georgia and exposed Georgia's offense, Stetson Bennett, and Kirby Smart for exactly what I've said he is and has been all year. It is undeniable that Georgia team was not good enough to be in the national conversation, despite the fact the media force-fed them down your throat as a top five team. They never were, they never have been this year, and they never will be. It'll never change. They might sneak a win here or there because they have a pretty solid defense, but they are not a relevant team on the national landscape. Simple as that. Also want to talk at the very end of the show, we're going to do an in-depth analysis breaking down what we have learned about the Buckeyes through the first quarter of the season. That'll be the second half of the show. So if you're not a subscriber on Patreon, you should go sign up, patreon.com/menacetosports for $3 a month. You get full episodes. The other thing we're doing tomorrow, I've talked about it forever, but that segment, I will shoot a video. Part of our Menace TV will be coming out tomorrow. So if you haven't subscribed to our YouTube, I know we have a bunch of subscribers on there. It's been kind of a dead channel, so you guys haven't been to it. But youtube.com/Menace2Sports, the number two, we're going to put out a video. Our video content starts tomorrow. That's the first video, the Buckeye breakdown through the first quarter of the season. Really awesome stuff. I just went and studied all the analytics and the film because the Rutgers game. I mean, there was some stuff to take away from it, but in reality, now we're three games in the season and probably a 11-game season. Not a 12-game, hopefully an 11-game season. So we're one quarter of the way through. What have we learned? What do we need to find out about the Buckeyes? And then also going to break down our two games of the week, like I mentioned. And also our gambling, if you haven't seen on Twitter and all social media, our weekend was ridiculous. Once again, I don't know what people are waiting for. And don't get me wrong, we have a ton of subscribers, more than I ever imagined. But if you gamble, or even if you want to gamble, you want to just have a small little bankroll and, you know, see, test it out, right? From Thursday to Sunday, we are up 87 units going into Monday Night Football. So I'll update you tomorrow on how the Monday Night picks go, but up 87 units. I don't know what else to tell you. Even a small bankroll of $1 a unit, betting 10 bucks a game or 20 bucks at the most, would have paid for 3 months of our picks. You would have made $87 this weekend. So you got to go check it out. Patreon.com/Menace2Picks or follow us on Twitter @Menace2Picks. We give out free picks too. So if you don't want to pay the money and you want to see about a couple free picks, check it out. And we had we won four bets on NFL Sunday. The only one we lost was the one we put out for free, and Old Takes Exposed got a hold of it. Like we were idiots for thinking Tampa Bay might win a game money line against New Orleans. But anyways, just cleaned up all weekend, hoping to clean up again tonight. Go check it out. And if you need a place to bet or you need some free cash to bet, let's hear from one of our sponsors in MyBookie. Ever since I started out, people have been asking me for advice on all kinds of things. But in covering sports, it's usually about who's going to win and what team they should bet on. You got the Patriots or 49ers this week, Bucks or Raiders. Well, the best piece of advice I can give to anyone is where you're betting. Where? It's just as important as who you're betting on. It's why I always tell people to visit MyBookie. They've got deposit matches, free bets, and huge cash prize contests for you to take advantage of all season long. NFL action? Check. College ball? Check. Plus, they have a mobile-friendly website and top-of-the-line customer service, making their platform a one-stop shop for all your betting needs. MyBookie offers action on everything from championship futures to NFL in-game live betting, making sure you're covered every step of the way. Congrats if you were one of the ones to cash in on the generous early season odds on the Lakers to win the NBA championship. Sign up at MyBookie today, and when you do, use our promo code MENACE to claim a deposit match dollar for dollar, all the way up to $1,000. It's a bonus designed to give you a little help and a head start on your winning season. That's promo code MENACE for you to claim your bonus when you make your deposit. Stacked UFC cards, presidential prop bets, all the major sports, and more await you. Sign up today and begin your winning season exclusively at MyBookie. There you have it. Free money. Free advice on Twitter. If you want to pay $25, you get the solid resume-backed advice. I don't know what else to tell you. You can win money on gambling. We bet everything from, we're doing Breeders' Cup, soccer, European soccer games, tennis matches, and then obviously college football, pro football. We did baseball, World Series, all that. We'll get into basketball as soon as that season begins, college and pro. So we're going all sports, all fun, and it's really awesome. I have friends of mine that have signed up and obviously a bunch of listeners, and they can attest. Just go on social media and look at what they're saying. Don't listen to me. Anyways. Enough trying to sell you on things that cost money that we're trying to promote. Let's talk college football and let's get to the show.
What a hit, Denzel Ward! You got barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it out to the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Well, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here then. Okay, see ya.
Well, first things first, we're not going to break down the game because we didn't intend to. There's other big games we have to break down. But for the Buckeye fans, I have your fix coming at the end of the show. We're going to talk in-depth Buckeye football from a coach's perspective. And we're really excited to talk about it because I spent a lot of time on it. But the Buckeyes won Saturday, 49-27, in the smallest margin of victory in series history with Rutgers. Greg Schiano pulled out all the stops, all the trick plays, the throwback, punt return, you name it. He pulled out all the stops, and he kept it close, 49-27. Heading into the game Saturday, Ohio State had beaten Rutgers by at least 35 points every time they played. And obviously, a 22-point victory was under the spread. That is one of the games we lost. We thought Ohio State would cover. And I'm going to tell you what, at halftime, it sure looked like it. But Justin Fields played dominant. The receivers are ridiculous. The run game is still really below average. And the defense, man, they got a lot to figure out. And Kerry Combs has to get it done because this is not looking like the silver bullets of last year. But like I said, we'll talk about all that in the second half of the show for those of you that are diehard Buckeyes. But let's talk about the landscape, man. West Coast football is back. First, Clay Helton and USC score 14 fourth quarter points to beat Herm Edwards, Arizona State Sun Devils 28-27, which was an awesome game if you didn't watch it. Kind of bizarre, a 9 a.m. kickoff out there so they could be the noon game. I get it. I mean, it gets the Pac-12 in front of most of the country because it's earlier, but that's an early game, man. I mean, noon games, we used to wake up at 7 a.m. I don't know what time you wake up for a 9 a.m. game, but I know this much. You better be at the stadium by 7 a.m., 2 hours before, so you can get taped and warmed up and all that. So I don't know what wake-up time is. I would imagine it's got to be 6 a.m., and you got to rush through, eat breakfast, and go. No meetings, no walkthroughs. I don't know. I'm going to reach out to some of my buddies in the Pac-12 because I'm curious. Like, how does that work? Like I said, for a noon game, we had 7 a.m. wake up, 5 hours before the game. I don't think you're going to wake up 5 hours before a 9 a.m. kick, a 4 a.m. wake-up call. Good luck playing well without any that kind of sleep. But USC came back and won to give Clay Helton a 1-0 start. The other game of note and team of note, I'm excited to start talking about them because they were one of the teams in the offseason I thought had a chance to be in that conversation is Oregon. Devoid of Justin Herbert, I still think they have a solid team. I love Mario Cristobal. They are a Pac-12 team that knows how to run the ball because they have a tough-ass O-line coach as the head coach. So that's a dangerous aspect to have to add into a Pac-12 team. So they absolutely dominated Stanford 35-14, played extremely well. Really happy to have them back on the landscape. And the other game, our other game of the week, BYU absolutely dismantled Boise State 51-17. So BYU is as real as you can get. Them and Cincinnati are as real as you can get in non-Power 5 football. And so the question is this. Let's play out a scenario. Let's say that Clemson beats Notre Dame in the ACC championship game, which I think will happen with Trevor Lawrence. I mean, they had injuries, guys didn't travel, and I'm not making an excuse because Notre Dame just dominated them. But let's say Clemson is at full strength, full health, and beats Notre Dame in the ACC championship game. All right, that's one part of this scenario. The other part is, what if Florida beats Bama in the SEC championship? Now, that one I don't think is going to happen. I think that is unlikely. But the question is, who gets in? Ohio State, assuming they can beat Indiana, which is probably going to be their toughest game of the year. Side note, go get your tickets. Ace on Lane. Braxton and I are holding a watch party on campus for the Indiana-Ohio State game. So just side note. But Ohio State, let's say they're undefeated. Obviously, they get in. Let's say Florida, they beat Alabama in the SEC championship game. Routed Georgia. Their only loss came to Texas A&M. So their candidate won. Bama, undefeated through the regular season, lost to Florida. Maybe a close game in the SEC championship game. Can they still get in? Or what about Texas A&M? Beat Florida, lost to Bama early, and obviously didn't make it to Atlanta because Bama had the head-to-head tiebreaker. Can A&M sneak in? And then Clemson, lost on the road to Notre Dame without Trevor Lawrence. You'd have to imagine they get in. And the next team is Notre Dame. Beat Clemson, undefeated regular season, lost to Clemson, whom they already beat. Right, so those are the six most likely candidates for the college football playoff. And then the three outliers, Oregon, can they go undefeated? With a smaller sample size and resume, can they get in over a one-loss team in this scenario? And then Cincinnati and BYU, if they go undefeated, do they deserve a shot over, let's say, a Florida, who only lost was to A&M, or over Clemson, who lost on the road at Notre Dame without Trevor Lawrence? Do they deserve a shot? BYU, the best quarterback statistically and grade-wise in the country is playing in BYU. Do they get a chance? Because the reality is, those are the nine teams still in contention. So my question to you, DM us, post about it on Twitter. Who out of those nine will be in the CFP? Nine teams right now on the cusp. Who are the four, the final four? Is it Texas A&M? Is it Oregon? Is it who could be that dark horse to sneak in? So that's my question. It's interesting to play out kind of the different scenarios as we come down the wire. But I want to talk about, let's get to some game analysis. The first game, wow, was Michigan-Indiana. Michael Penix Jr. in Indiana just scorched Don Brown's defense. I mean, he threw for 342 yards and three touchdowns. It was a complete and absolute ass-kicking of epic proportions. Michigan ran the ball, and this is not in the first quarter, not in the first half. They did not average this. In totality. In total, Michigan ran the ball for 13 yards. 13 yards. On top of that, how about this stat for you? Indiana ran 36 more offensive plays than Michigan. They outgained them by 100 yards. How did they do that? You got to look at it. How did Indiana get 36 extra plays on offense? That's unfair, right? Here's how they did it. They were 55% on third and fourth down. Michigan was 27%, half as productive. So Indiana kept drives alive and ran plays. And they beat they literally beat the brakes off of Michigan is what they did. And the greatest evidence of the state of Michigan's program right now was on how Indiana scored their first two touchdowns. Both of Indiana's first touchdowns came on free plays. Free plays where they gave a hard count, the defense jumped off sides, so they snapped the ball knowing they had a free 5-yard penalty, and no matter what happened on that play, that was worst case scenario. They gained 5 yards. So they launched it to the end zone twice, both times touchdowns. Free plays. That's the lack of discipline. And I don't have the stat. I should have looked it up. They jumped off sides like 10 times. They had to have. Just the lack of discipline on the defensive line, and Don Brown and this defense are not... They're not going to cut it. I don't know what else to say. The O-line, Michigan's offensive line played horrific. Shout out Ed Warner, best O-line coach in the world. They played terrible. The offense was a complete mess. I thought Ronnie Bell played exceptional. Joe Milton played decent. But the offense as in its totality was a mess. And the defense got bent over and spanked. It was embarrassing for Don Brown, to say the least. So the question is, is this the time? Those of you that weren't on the bandwagon or weren't on the train last week when I said it was going full steam. If you weren't on the train last week, you need to jump on. Jim Harbaugh has overstayed his welcome. I guess unless you're a Buckeye fan, and then you're really rooting for a lifetime contract for the son of a bitch. It's over. If I'm a Michigan fan, it is over. It's time to move forth and find anyone else. Is it Luke Fickell? Is it Matt Campbell? Or is it like Ohio State did, Oklahoma did, Georgia did, Clemson did? Maybe you need to find an elite coordinator that could be the next hot coach. You look at the track record. These schools. So who is in the top right now, right? Oregon hired a coordinator. You could say he used to be a head coach at FIU. I know that. But they hired a coordinator. Their program is very elevated, right? Georgia, coordinator. Alabama, okay, proven head coach, right? Florida, kind of proven head coach. All right, Clemson, coordinator. Ohio State, coordinator. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Oklahoma, coordinator. Sometimes you go with these proven head coaches and they don't always work out, a la Texas and Tom Herman, a la Michigan and Jim Harbaugh. I would love to know the percentage on that. So that's my opinion. Michigan needs to move on, and they need to do a great job finding the next coach. Because last time it was just the easy choice, right? Throw a shitload of money at the prodigal son, Jim Harbaugh, and he will just bring the program back. Simple as that. No need to actually do some work and figure it out. No need to have some balls and hire a guy like Gene Smith did when he hired Ryan Day. That takes balls. That takes work. You really, really have to be in tune with the game and college football to know who is going to be successful and who's not. And even then, it's not an exact science. But it's time for Jim Harbaugh to go. Simple as that. And now, breaking news today, lucky Michigan, Wisconsin is able to play. After forfeiting two games, in my opinion, they forfeited two games. Barry Alvarez watched Michigan and said, you know what? We don't need to sit this one out. Let's take this cake win. Even though, surprise, surprise, I'm going to actually pick Michigan to beat Wisconsin in that game. But never mind that. They have to play the Badgers. And you know they didn't want to have to play them after the two games they just went through. What an embarrassment. But that is the state of Michigan program and really the state of the Big Ten and state of the Midwest. And if you are a true Ohio State fan, as much as you like to see Michigan lose, it's bad for the brand. What Notre Dame did for Midwest football on Saturday was huge. It was epic. It was ginormous. To take down Clemson and beat them the way they did gave the brand of Midwest football a stronger name. If Notre Dame and Ohio State can make the playoffs, and maybe what if they win and play each other? Or what if they play each other in semis? Or God, can you imagine a national championship? Ohio State, Notre Dame? Ohio State fans will have wet dreams for a month, as will Notre Dame fans. What are we talking about? That would be unbelievable. But let's get to the SEC showdown of the week. The battle for the East, Dan Mullen and the Florida Gators in the world's largest outdoor cocktail party took on Kirby Smart and the Georgia Bulldogs. And I want you to think about this before we get to the game. Think about Kirby Smart looking at his QB group back in May or June. One, he's thinking, I should have Justin Fields right now, first and foremost. I fucked that up. We rode Jake Fromm State Farm, and now we don't have Justin Fields. He should be coming back for a Heisman candidate year for us, Georgia, right? That's number one. But never mind that. He knew he had a problem, right? He knew he had a problem because Fields wasn't there. Fromm is gone. DeJuan Mathis was going to be young. He needed to get a guy. So he goes out and gets two of them. JT Daniels, the starting quarterback at USC that hurt his knee and grad transferred, was eligible right away. And then Jamie Newman, the kid who lit it up at Wake Forest. So he's riding into the season saying, I have two former starters to run this program, which is all I need. I need a quarterback. We have a running back. We have at least one receiver. We're going to be better off than last year. Our defense should be strong. He's looking at his QB group saying, we got a chance. And then what happens? He loses Jamie Newman to an opt-out, which is ridiculous. Then JT Daniels starts the year. I guess he was injured, but I don't know what the fuck the deal is now. Because JT Daniels has at least played at an average level in the Pac-12. Let's give Kirby the benefit of the doubt and say that JT Daniels is average. What we watched on Saturday and have watched all year, and I have preached it every week, almost every episode, is the worst quarterback play at Georgia in a long time, since I can remember. It was awful. So Stetson Bennett, who does not belong on an SEC football field, he is 5 of 16. 5 complete passes in the game. 5 for 31% overall. They didn't even have to blitz him. Florida didn't have to blitz him. They only blitzed him 5 times in the whole game. And he was 3 for 12 because he was 3 for 12, 25% completion percentage versus base defense. Do you understand what that means? Not pressured. Base defense. They're playing generic coverages. And he cannot complete passes. 1 out of every 4 was complete. He was 0 for 3 on deep balls, 2 for 11 over 10 yards. Fucking horrendous. Awful, awful quarterback play. And so what did they do? They finally benched him. And I made the comment, why did it take this long? And a bunch of people came back, you must not have watched the first game. Dwan Mathis looked out of place. I know that. I'm not saying Dwan Mathis is the answer, but at least he can run it a little bit. He's a little athletic. And he completed a deep ball, for Christ's sake. He threw a touchdown pass. Unfortunately, he was not much better than Stetson. He did hit a deep ball, and thank God. He was 4 of 12, 33%. So, I mean, say what you want. He was still better. 4 for 12. He's one completion better. And one of them was a deep ball for a touchdown. Now, he did throw 2 picks. But he's a freshman. If you'd have rode that freshman from game 1, he'd be twice the player he is today. You might have lost a game. But at least you'd have a better offensive system, offensive playmaker at quarterback. And at least, if nothing else, the kid can run around a little bit, which is far better than Stetson Bennett. Combined, they were 9 of 29 for 112 yards and 3 interceptions. 3.9 yards per completion. That's bad per rush in the run game, let alone in the pass game. And after the game, my favorite, Kirby Smart was asked, and here is his quote. He said, right now, we feel like Stetson and Dwan give us a better shot because they have a better body of work. That left me scratching my head. Like, what is the body of... They have a better body of work than JT Daniels? JT Daniels hasn't been given the opportunity to have a body of work. Never mind the fact that no one has a better body of work. Or no one has a worse body of work than Stetson Bennett and Dwan Mathis have right now. No one. It's just an abomination. An abomination. And then Zamir White had that one explosive 75-yard run. It was a great run. It showed his abilities, right? But other than that, he was just okay. He only had 6 carries outside of that. They only handed him the ball 7 times. I just can't understand it. You think you're going to beat a good football team riding the arm of Stetson Bennett? He averaged 32 yards on 6 carries outside of the 75-yard run. 5 yards a carry. That's not bad. Probably should hand it to him more. Overall, the team, Georgia's offense, minus the one big hit, had 90 yards rushing on 28 carries for 3.2 yards per carry. The offense was absolutely abysmal. How about this? Georgia only reached the red zone once. Never mind scoring in the red zone. You got to get there. They reached the red zone one time, and they were 2 of 13 on third down. That is just absolutely pitiful. 15%. You'll never win a game. You can't keep a single drive alive, and it all comes down and falls at the feet of your quarterback. Florida really put together their most and first, really, solid defensive performance of the year. And it was against such an inept offense that we still have to talk about it, but they only missed 5 tackles. They had 20 QB pressures, 3 sacks, 4 tackles for loss, and 20 defensive stops. Georgia did a horrendous job involving Kyrus Jackson. They targeted the other kid, they had Matt Landers, the most in the pass game 5 times. And they were 0 for 5 throwing him the ball. They launched 4 deep balls to him, 0 for 4. Kyrus only saw 3 targets past the line of scrimmage, and he hit on 2 of the 3, including his touchdown. Sometimes coaches are fucking idiots. You know that? Don't overcomplicate it. You got a back that's averaging 5 yards a carry that you should be able to run the ball decently. Florida's run defense was just average. And then you have a star at receiver. Get him the ball. Find a way. It's called game planning. You don't have to be Peyton Manning or Tom Brady to throw it to a receiver. You just have to have good game plan ways to get him touches. They didn't. They did none of it. Now, I'll tell you this. Kyrie Elam, the cornerback for Florida, who, by the way, his dad was a great player at Notre Dame. Urban recruited him. I know him really well. Abe Elam. Kyrie Elam was lights out. He was targeted 6 times on the day and only gave up 1 catch to the running back, James Cook, for 4 yards. Landers was 0 for 3 on Kyrie. Marco Wilson, on the other side, saw minimal action, allowing no catches on the only 2 targets that came his way. So ultimately, Florida's defense stepped it up. That is the reality. Kyrie Elam, Marco Wilson, both played well. Now, granted, against average receivers. It's like 2-year broken record. Georgia has average receivers. I don't know if you know that. It's bad. But here's what it is: a bad day for your offense when your highest graded player, Zamir White, was the highest graded player, 73% grade. He only saw the football 7 times. And your 2 quarterbacks graded out the lowest on the team. Stetson Bennett graded out 41%. Dewan Mathis, 26%. Let's just take common sense. I promise you that my daughter, who's 8 years old, could do this, make this decision better than Kirby Smart and Todd Monken have done. Do you want your best player, highest graded player, touching the ball more, or your lowest graded player, your quarterback, throwing the ball to win? What's a better way? I get it. They got down, had to throw it. It's ineptitude at the highest level. You couldn't screw these decisions up more than Kirby Smart is. I mean, 41% and 26%? How much worse can JT Daniels really be? Like, this is a joke. And what is wrong with Kirby Smart and the OC quarterback coach, Todd Monken? If it wasn't bad enough, they had to watch Justin Fields dominate last year, and now this year, they won't give JT Daniels a chance to take the reins. I can promise you this much, it cannot be worse. It can't be. I'm going to tell you what, it was disgusting. Now, on the other side of it, Kyle Trask, wow, he showed out. 70% completion, 30 of 43, 3 for 4 on deep ball, 74%, 12 for 15 over 10 yards, 80%. It was a dominant quarterback performance, period. It wasn't even close. They were the tale of two cities, the Jekyll and Hyde. Kyle Trask, dominant. Whoever was at quarterback for Georgia, just awful. 7 of 16 on third down is decent in a big game. Like I said on the show many times, you want to be over 50%. But if you're around that 45% range, I mean, you're going to be in the top 10 in the country at 45%. And in a big game, that's phenomenal. So it was excellent by Florida. Florida had the ball 15 minutes more than Georgia and controlled the game Georgia scored on their first 2 drives, and then Florida took it over. And it was never a game after that. Now, the issue, Florida still has issues. Let's talk about the issues they have that will rear their head in December against Alabama. 10 of their 30 completions were to running backs. 212 of Trask's 474 yards were to running backs. That's not great for the throw game, especially when you don't have Travis Etienne, right? You're throwing to some average backs. Florida's top 5 graded threats in the pass game on Saturday were 2 running backs and 3 tight ends. Now, don't get me wrong, KT is a monster. Kadarius Toney, he is a great player. I'm not going to discount him. He was targeted 10 times, twice as many as anyone else, and reeled in 7 of them, but only had 42 yards. But I'll give Florida fans that. He is a monster. And Kyle Pitts is a monster. But they need other receivers. I know Trayvon Grimes caught a contested catch, high-pointed a ball, excellent play on Tyson Campbell. It was a phenomenal catch, but he doesn't get open. Sorry. He's got to get open. Richard LeCount not playing for Georgia. I've talked about him all year. He's one of the best safeties, if not the best safety in the country. Him not playing for Georgia certainly was a big factor, even though Kyle Pitts didn't do a ton. He only had 2 looks in the game. But if you remember the preview episode, Georgia had not allowed a touchdown to a tight end all year, and he broke that streak on Saturday. The other thing Georgia didn't do in Kirby's defense, they didn't get to Trask effectively at all the whole game. They only recorded 1 sack, they're averaging over 3 a game, and they only hit Trask 5 times on his 44 passing plays. Now, the right tackle, Gene DeLance, was the glaring weakness in pass pro. He allowed 7 of the quarterback pressures alone. The next highest by a single player was 2. So it's a glaring weakness, another one. The other thing that Florida did, they took the blueprint that Alabama laid out for them. Steve Sarkisian gave them the formula to attack Georgia. Dan Mullen went after Tyson Campbell. He was targeted 5 times, gave up 4 catches, and 3 of those 4 catches were touchdowns. Kyle Pitts, Kenmore Gamble, and Trayvon Grimes all scored on Tyson. And he is evidently in a rut right now that he needs to pull out of, because he's a far better player than he's played in Georgia's 2 biggest games this year. I know. I watched him all year, and I was touting him as one of the best in the country because he is, talent-wise. But he has had 2 rough games that he needs to bounce back from. In all reality, Georgia's corners struggled all game. 21 targets, 13 catches, 170 yards, and 4 touchdowns when they were in coverage. So, just, you got to give it to Dan Mullen. You got to give it to Florida. You got to give it to Kyle Trask. What a game and what a win for the Gators. A dominant performance in the biggest game they'll have all year until the SEC championship game. And they are they're poising to make people think twice about that Alabama matchup. Now, I'm here to tell you it's not even close, but at least they should be able to they'll perform better than I thought they would have 3 weeks ago. They're showing some flashes, some improvements. They still need skill on the perimeter. Their defense has to show me that again against a better offense. And they have no run game. And that's ultimately a downfall if they don't have a single threat in the run game. So, great win by Florida. Terrible loss by Georgia. But the picture in the SEC is becoming clearer. It is the three-team race for a playoff berth. And it's Alabama, Florida, and A&M. Period. End of discussion. Georgia's out. I said Georgia was out 3 weeks ago, though. But anyways, that is what it is. But the game of the week for two teams that are playoff teams, probably. They looked like playoff teams, certainly. Clemson at Notre Dame. South Bend, Indiana, under the lights with not a lot of people in the stands. It was the best game I've seen all year. What a great football game. I mean, obviously going to the double OT and just the back and forth. Notre Dame goes up early. Clemson battles back. It was a phenomenal game. But the most confusing thing to me, Corona Bros, the COVID nation, was why in the hell can Trevor Lawrence be on the sideline, taking his mask off, talking to players, spreading his germs? Why can he do that and not play? What is the difference? If he gets his germs on all the players on Clemson's team and they go on the field and play Notre Dame's players, Notre Dame's players get those germs too. So one of two things is true. One is he's not contagious, so just let him play. Or he is contagious and nobody seems to give a shit because this is all for perspective. Perception, I guess, not perspective. All for perception. That's what it is. It's one of the two, nothing else. So if you're a Corona bro, one, you probably don't listen to the show because you're a fucking idiot. Or two, you do listen to the show and you hate me because I'm over this shit. I'm so over it. However, other news, the election happened finally and now we have a vaccine that's coming out. Fucking miraculous, isn't it? Anyways, I'm not going to go there though. But the biggest thing I saw was just total team football. Clemson obviously struggled the first half, had a solid second half to tie the game and ended up going into overtime, right? In the first half, their average starting field position was the 21-yard line. In the second half, it was the 32-yard line. That's 11 yards better. Your stats go up 20%. Your likelihood to score points improves 20% from the 20 to the 32. That's why it was a different ball game in the second half. Simple as that. Oh, Notre Dame, in the first half, 37-yard line average starting field position. In the second half, the 25-yard line. So they both flipped. That's why it went the way it went. We could stop right there. That's why the first half looked like it did, and that's why the second half looked like it did. Simple as that. Now, Notre Dame on offense, I will say this right now. Ian Book impressed me. He really did. Not necessarily throwing the ball. He was not a dominant quarterback. We'll get to the stats in a minute. But he impressed me with how he competed, how he scrambled, how he kept plays alive. I mean, the kid was impressive, no matter what you want to say. He's still not an elite thrower, but he's a really, really good quarterback. So I'm going to backtrack on it. You know me, I'm honest. I call it like I see it. I mean, he started out 5 for 5 in the first quarter for 71 yards, and it was just like cooking with grease. To be honest, both quarterbacks, the first quarter ended, both quarterbacks were 5 for 5, 10 for 10. It was just excellent quarterback play. But my offensive player of the game is Kyren Williams. And it's not because he had 140 total yards or 3 touchdowns. It's not because he averaged 6.1 yards per carry. And it's not, I mean, that's not what it is. He was phenomenal in pass protection. I mean, excellent picking up blitzers, you name it. 31 snaps of pass blocking. He only allowed one quarterback pressure. It wasn't even a sack. It was just a pressure. In total, Clemson only pressured Ian Book 11 times. And 5 of those pressures were on Ian Book holding onto the ball too long. So 6 times Clemson got to Ian Book and pressured him a little bit on 48 pass plays. That is unreal. The offensive line was unfucking real. They're the best O-line in the country, and you can't tell me Ohio State's is better. What I watched on Saturday confirmed what I said preseason. They are 1, Ohio State is 2 if they keep developing. They have the best offensive line in the country, and they looked even better than I thought they would on Saturday. I thought Clemson might expose them a little bit. I knew they were great, but it was simply 5 grown men dominating in the run game, solid-ass walls in the pass game. Ian Book was gifted time. Kyren Williams was gifted running lanes. And Ian Book showed me, ultimately, the ability to win the game. That's huge for a quarterback. He didn't dominate through the air passing, 56% passing completion percentage, 47% over 10 yards, 3 for 8 on deep balls, 38%, not great, 44% under pressure, not great. 67% of his passing yards were when Clemson blitzed because Notre Dame picked it up. And Ian Book showed me he could go win a game at the end. That is huge. He had a 90% grade on the game. And when you just talk about how he threw the ball, which was pretty average at best, to grade out at 90% showed that on the big stage, he showed up and quieted all the doubters. Most specifically, yours truly. Now, he didn't silence me. He quieted me because he still didn't throw the ball great. But 10 of 20 on third and fourth down. We just talked about it, Florida, Georgia. 50% conversions in a game of this magnitude in a top five matchup? Unbelievable. That's how they won the game. That's how they stayed in the game. That's how they got to overtime. Not only dominating at the line of scrimmage, but keeping drives alive. 50% of the time, they kept the drive alive. I will say this, Javon McKinley, the big receiver, provided a spark of offense on the outside. He's a big physical receiver who had his way with Sheridan Jones, the corner from Clemson. 83 yards receiving for the 6'2", 215-pound receiver, and he showed his 30-pound advantage and two and a half inch height differential in that matchup. It looked like more than that. I would have said he was 40 pounds heavier and 4 inches taller because he was a jump ball and possession receiver, just dominant receiver. And Sheridan Jones was the weakness for the secondary. He had the lowest coverage grade out of the 19 players who had to cover someone on Saturday. He gave up 4 catches, almost 100 yards. He had a 44% grade in coverage. The secondary kind of showed the little weakness against Boston College, and now Notre Dame just exploited him specifically. Now, Darion Kendrick is a really good player. We knew that. He started last year. He was really good last year. He's still a really good player. But Sheridan Jones was the weakness. The other side of the ball showed some concerning things, right? When Clemson had the ball, first of all, only 13 rushing yards in the first half. They couldn't run the ball. And it's been that year, that's been the issue all year. They have the best back in the country, and they constantly have to throw them the ball because they can't run it. They only had 34 yards on the ground, and it's the lowest total they had rushing the ball since 2011 against NC State. 9 years. The lowest they've had in 9 years. The defensive game plan that Notre Dame employed was very clear early on. Travis Etienne was not to beat the Irish. They did everything in their power, fully selling out to stop the run. He had 1.6 yards per carry on 18 carries. Job well done, Notre Dame. And then DJ Uiagalelei played commendable. He did have a few missed throws, two specifically critical third downs that he missed that I believe Trevor Lawrence makes those throws. I'm not an apologist. I'm not here to say that Clemson would have won with Trevor Lawrence, but Trevor, I believe, would have made those throws. What won the game for Notre Dame was turnovers and third downs. Clemson was 4 of 15, 27% on third down. That's atrocious. Atrocious. Notre Dame created 3 turnovers. Although, I swear, I mean, I don't, you talk about poetic. How in the world Amari Rodgers' fumble on the slant route was not ruled an incomplete pass, all while knowing the same thing happened, probably even worse, in the playoff game last year. I know Ohio State fans were livid because I learned last year that that is an incompletion, but in this game it was a fumble. But Notre Dame was disruptive. Clemson's pass pro was not great. I mean, Notre Dame had 10 tackles for loss, 13 quarterback pressures, 24 stops, which is a tackle that constitutes a loss for the offense, 9 missed tackles total, so single digits. They played extremely well. The main issue for Clemson was they couldn't get the ball downfield to Amari Rodgers. Simple as that. And they couldn't get Travis at the end. You got to get your two best players the ball. Amari Rodgers had 1 catch over 10 yards. And they didn't get Travis at the end involved past the line of scrimmage. It was only screen game. He had 2 catches past the line of scrimmage and 6 behind line of scrimmage. They don't have the talent in the outside receiver position to not use him, Travis, as a primary receiver past the line of scrimmage. They don't. The screen game was pretty good, but he was a non-factor in their biggest game of the year. You can't let that happen. I will say this, Cornell Powell impressed me. He emerged as a decent option for Uiagalelei, but still was a non-factor outside the hash marks. He caught all 6 of his passes between the hashes. He was 2-for-2 on deep balls for 104 of his yards and a touchdown, which was monumental for Clemson to hang in this game. But a far cry from the impact that T. Higgins and Justin Ross had from 2018 to 2019. They don't have that presence. Simple as that. And then my game changers of the game. Things that dictated the outcome. The first one was the 56-yard field goal Notre Dame attempted at the end of half. It was short. Travis Etienne catches it. The most dynamic player in the country has the ball with 100 yards to run. And seven of the other team's players are fat guys. How is that not a touchdown? He got tackled by the kicker. Should have never happened. A simple cutback. It wouldn't have even taken effort. Just make him miss. Cut back. Should have been a touchdown. And then Clemson gets the ball in their last offensive possession and only managed to run 22 seconds off the clock, going out of bounds, just mistake after mistake. And Notre Dame only had to burn one timeout on that last possession, and they only ran 22 seconds off the clock. It's unideal, to say the least. And then in the second overtime, here's the play that lost the game for Clemson. Notre Dame had a holding call in the second overtime that would have put them way behind the chains. And after the holding call, they threw the ball, and number 18, I should have looked up his name, Clemson's defender gets a personal foul on a dumbass bonehead move, hitting a kid out of bounds, and gifted them a first down. Game changer. The most impactful dumbass mistake of the year. They're about to be, whatever it was, second and 20 or third and 20. I think it was second. It was going to be second and 20 in overtime. Come on, man. You got a good enough defense. You are going to win that battle. And then you get the ball, and all you've got to get is a field goal or you have the upper hand. A bonehead personal foul gives them a first down. They end up scoring, and then the rest is history, right? Clemson manages to not be able to score. Game over. Notre Dame wins. The red zone was a wash. Notre Dame was 3-for-6 touchdowns in the red zone. Clemson was 3-for-5. So both had 3 touchdowns. But we all do know what happens now, right? Clemson will beat Notre Dame in the ACC championship game with Trevor Lawrence, and chaos will ensue about Notre Dame making the CFP, and they will have a point. Or let's look at history. Let's go back 27 years. 1993, Notre Dame defeats number one FSU on the final play in South Bend. 2020, Notre Dame defeats number one Clemson on the final play in South Bend. 1993, Notre Dame loses to Boston College the very next Saturday. 2020, Notre Dame plays Boston College this Saturday. Could it be? Could Jeff Hafley repeat history from 27 years ago? Doubt it, but could be cool. Could be fun to watch. Maybe the old the Boston College Eagles will upset the new leader in the ACC. What a game that would be. But all in all, phenomenal football game. I mean, just phenomenal. Mistakes, but not a ton. Good offense, good defense. The line play for Notre Dame was so impressive. Ian Book, his competitive nature was impressive. Hats off to Notre Dame. You won a big-time game. It was the first time since I can remember. I don't even know the last big game they won. I mean, going all the way back to 2012, getting smoked by Alabama, they finally won a big game. I know Clemson was injury-ridden. I know that. But reality is reality. They won this football game in an impressive fashion, and they are the ruler in the ACC. Anyways, that's 43 minutes of college football content from Menace to Sports for free. Thank you for tuning in. I appreciate it. If you want to hear the Buckeye first quarter season update, you have two options. You could check it out Tuesday or today, depending on when you're listening. Tuesday on YouTube /Menace to Sports and subscribe, turn on notifications. We will have our video out on the Buckeye first quarter season update tomorrow, or pay $3 on patreon.com/Menace to Sports and get full episodes for the month. We are back on it. We are back at it. Next episode coming out on Patreon Wednesday, coming out to the public Thursday, previewing this week's games. And we appreciate you for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you're entertained. Hope you learned something. Hope you had fun talking about some big-time college football games. But thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. As always, I appreciate you. And if you didn't enjoy it, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
What a hit! Denzel Ward! You got barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me! Hurt my feelings!
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it out to the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Well, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here then. Okay, see ya.